Welcome to Two Travel Dads Podcast. Here we share our favorite destinations, travel tips, stories from our adventures, and bring on awesome guests to share insights into their travelsome lives. Be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and check out our detailed show notes at twotraveldads.com/podcast-episodes. Hey, welcome back to another episode of Two Travel Dads Podcast. I'm Rob, and I've got my good friend Colleen Minnick here with us again. This is our fourth podcast episode we've recorded.
It is. Thanks for inviting me back.
Well, you are a great person to have on here because I enjoy talking to you, for one. I think you're eloquent. You've got good stories, and you have a different point of view than I do.
So, well, I love that about you too. These are so fun.
Yeah. And today, what I want to talk about. So, last podcast that we recorded together was all about your book, So Said the River, which will be available if you're listening to this pre-June 2024. It's available in June 2024. And if you're listening to this after then go buy Colleen's book. And there is links on our website for it. But today what I wanted to talk about, because you are such an awesome landscape photographer and really have such an expertise in the Southwest. And I mean, you live in Arizona in a beautiful place. I wanted to get your thoughts and opinion on all the kind of like the coolest, maybe a little off the beaten path, or just what are the best places for people to go and have a Southwest experience, whether that be for landscape or hiking or just to kind of commune with nature. I know that you and I both enjoy doing that ourselves, so let's get everybody else to do it too.
Yeah, perfect. How long is this podcast?
I'm gonna limit it. I'm gonna say that we should not go over 30 minutes.
Okay. There's so many.
I know, but you know, I sent you questions in advance so that we can stay on track, because
we can do it.
You know, I think the first thing that anybody thinks about, whether they are here in the US or if they're international, I think the first thing people think of when they think of the Southwest, and Arizona specifically, is the Grand Canyon, which,
absolutely.
I mean, it's very grand. I've been there twice in the last like 4 months. I love it. I know you love it. So why don't we start there? Like, when we're thinking Grand Canyon, what would you tell somebody when they want to experience it for the first time and just be wowed?
Yeah, I mean, even your loftiest expectations of a grand view are going to be absolutely blown away. And I don't want to oversell it, but the Grand Canyon is one of the most spectacular sights in the entire world. You have the chance to see the Colorado River flow through billion-year-old rocks. And it is just absolutely magnificent to see what the wind and the river and erosion has done. It's just, it's a work of art. It's a natural work of art. It's just spectacular. And so there's two sides. There's the South Rim, the North Rim. There's actually a third part, which is Lee's Ferry, which is where all the rafting community puts in for their rafting trips, which if you haven't done yet, you absolutely should. It's a very different experience to be in the canyon as opposed to on the rim. Not better, not worse, just different.
What do you mean? What is so different about being at the bottom of the canyon versus being up at the top where you've got, you know, the desert wind and you've got the view across it? What makes the bottom of the canyon so different?
Well, so first and foremost, you get to touch these billion-year-old rocks, which I find very exciting. I'm kind of a geology geek. And so, but I think when you're at the top, it's almost hard to comprehend the scale of things. It's so vast. It's so big. And I think the South Rim, I tend to get a little bit more overwhelmed than the North Rim. And on the North Rim, you're a little bit closer to some of the rock formations. So you have this sort of sense of scale. when you're at the bottom of the Grand Canyon and you're looking up and you can't even see the top of the rim most of the time, it's mind-blowing. And with a river trip specifically, you know, when you're on the river for the first time, you don't have any idea where you're going. And so you can't see around the next bend, and you're always in the present moment. There's no cell phones, there's no showers, there's no napkins. Like, it's a very wild experience. And so for me, it's you're a little bit more isolated at the bottom. There's obviously less people, and you get to connect with the river and with the rocks and with the flora and the fauna and the wind, all of the things all at once at the bottom. And so it's, like I said, it's just a really different experience. I've gone down the Grand Canyon, I think this year will be my 9th trip in 9 years. It's almost, it's like addicting. Like, that's how great it is.
And don't you do group trips where either, I don't know if I don't think you're not the leader, you're not the captain of it, but like you bring people who want to experience it.
I do. So I arrange private charters for photography groups. They also include people who are not photographers, because it's such a phenomenal experience. But yeah, I take private charters. I hire an outfitter, Hatch River Expeditions, to help put the trip together. They've been on the river for 90 years, so they know what they're doing. And I just kind of facilitate the photographic exercises and whatnot.
Got it. And, you know, if I recall, in your book, you also talked about some time rafting the Grand Canyon, too, which I really enjoyed that part of it.
My very first trip down. It was transformational.
Yeah. And did your mom raft with you on the canyon as well?
She did. And she's been down a couple of times with me. Yep.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cool. I love that that's another like bonding thing that you guys have.
Absolutely.
To me, rafting the Grand Canyon, because I know that it's such an epic experience that takes a week, you know, it's to do that multiple times, especially with another person. I think that is so cool. And I'm a tad bit, it's only a little bit jealous.
Well, you should come with us. And I can tell you that every time gets better. Well, every time I go down, it gets better, because you know what to expect and you can just soak it all. And the magnitude is just so great.
Months ago when I talked to you about that, you were like, my next one's already sold out. And I was like, oh, come on.
2025 is already sold out too, Rob. I'm sorry.
Seriously? Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, fine. We'll figure it out.
We'll talk.
Put it on the calendar for 26, I guess. All right. So Grand Canyon. Yes, it's awesome.
Yeah.
What's your favorite spot on the South Rim? I'm really well versed in the South Rim, but not so much on the North. So I'm curious where your favorite is.
Yeah, my favorite is the Desert View Watchtower area. Not only can you see the river and you can see the Angkor Delta, you can see kind of the vastness, the openness of the Grand Canyon itself. But there's an actual watchtower there that Mary Coulter designed in the 1930s.
Beautiful. Oh, I love it.
Oh, it's spectacular. Just in terms of the architecture and how she used the influences of the area, the Native American influences in the area it's just a masterpiece, quite honestly. And so that's where I would go if I had limited time on the South Rim.
I think that's a great call. My favorite spot is Maricopa Point at the other end of the National Park. That is just, wow. I've done sunrise and sunset there. And it is such a different experience, morning versus evening. And it's so beautiful. And it's just that it's that point that juts out into the canyon. So you are just surrounded. And that's why I love it. That's my favorite.
Yeah. It's just so fun to watch the light dance from morning to evening. And it's like a totally different place. So I am so thrilled that you've been out there at some dance center.
And it's funny because each time I go, my husband makes a comment of, oh, I still haven't been.
Like, oh, no.
Yeah, somehow Chris has never been to Grand Canyon, so
we'll
fix that.
We should change that.
Yeah,
we need to change that.
Well, if only there was a rafting trip we could go on. Thinking about canyons, so the Grand Canyon is one thing. It is exceptionally grand. It is layer upon layer, miles, atmospheric distortion through the whole thing. It's just phenomenal. What would you say is probably, I don't know if it would be, what's your next favorite canyon? There's so many canyons in the Southwest to explore. What's your next pick?
Oh, it's hard. I would have to go upstream, and I would say Glen Canyon. And Glen Canyon is It is part of the Glen Canyon National Recreation Area, which features Lake Powell, which it's on the Colorado River watershed, but it is a reservoir created by the Glen Canyon Dam. And it's Glen Canyon has, it's hundreds of miles of the main stem canyon, but there's like 90 some additional canyons. So it's like a dendritic canyon of dendritic canyons. It's just spectacular.
Great word. Like dendrils like that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, that is spectacular. That's a spectacular place. And there's plenty of water recreation, water-based recreation, in addition to hiking. There's even ATV use if you're into that sort of thing at like Lone Rock. They have a dedicated place for that. And so, you can explore to your heart's content all of these little channels and fingers and slot canyons and rock formations. It's really amazing.
Yeah. Last month I was at the, actually the Glen Canyon Dam Overlook, which, you know, into like Black Canyon, I think is what's below. And then eventually into Horseshoe Bend, because we were there visiting Horseshoe Bend. And
awesome.
That whole network of the Colorado was just, that was so cool too. I was very, you know, Horseshoe Bend, it's that Instagram spot, right? It
sure.
was so much better than Instagram makes it out to be. Like, I'm over the influencers taking that iconic
right.
selfie. The actual experience of getting to walk around that whole bend of the river, that I thought was super cool. And I guess, is that a continuation of Glen Canyon? Or is that
its own? So, yeah, fun fact, that is basically the original Glen Canyon. So when the Glen Canyon Dam was built, the reservoir, the river backed up, and so it flooded a great deal of the original Glen Canyon. And so below the dam, there to Lee's Ferry, is original Glen Canyon. So that's a very special place as well.
It's astounding. It's one of the coolest. And, you know, since we're talking about that little area right there in Page, I also just got to do the Lower Antelope. That was so cool. That was some of the most wild rock formations in such tight quarters. I loved that. That was awesome. Enjoyed that.
Isn't it incredible what sandstone can do with water?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yes. It was amazing. Have you done like there's lower, upper, and then I know there's also X Canyon. Have you done all three of the canyons right there in Antelope?
I have. There's actually others. There's like Secret and Rattlesnake. And that whole area is littered with slot canyons. And, you know, not only on the Navajo Reservation, but also in Glen Canyon itself. If you're willing to go a little bit off the beaten path and you're willing to explore, there are so many waiting for you.
I mean, you never have to ask me twice. You could tell me to go somewhere and I'll just go. So good times.
All right.
What else? What's another amazing Southwest site, whether it be canyon, river, lake? What's your next pick that you think captures the Southwest the best?
So my heart is tied with the Colorado River. So I'm going to go downstream this time and go to Lake Havasu. Lake Havasu is, again, another reservoir along the Colorado River system. But what I love about Havasu, it's a really popular place, especially in spring break. So if you're looking to avoid the crowds, let's not go at spring break time. But it is considered the Pacific Flyway. And so if you are into birds, raw birds, they believe that over 300 species of birds either migrate through there or they make their home there, they nest there, they breed there. And so it is a phenomenal place to see wildlife. And the other thing that's really interesting about Lake Havasu, get this. Arizona has one of the most lighthouses in the country.
That's hilarious.
Yes, it is.
But
most people do not
it.
Associate. Yeah, well, they don't associate, you know, Arizona with water, but there are 28 replica lighthouses along the shorelines of Lake Havasu. And so, if you want to see Split Rock or Cape
Hatteras.
That's just
hilarious because that's such like a kitschy sort of thing to do, but also... That's fantastic.
Well, they serve a purpose. So they're fabulous to go around and look at and you know, photograph, but they actually serve a very specific purpose, which is they act as navigational lights act as safety for the boaters on the Kabasoon. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Just a clever way to do it.
Oh, that's funny. And I think of Lake Havasu and I think of like houseboats and stuff. Isn't that on Lake Havasu where they've got all the different houseboat marinas?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I mean, all of the different reservoirs have their different houseboats, but yeah, there's a lot of houseboating on Lake Havasu.
Yeah, because that's the first thing that comes to mind for me when I think of Lake Havasu. What else? What's next? So we've hit Grand Canyon, Glen Canyon, Havasu. What is another just icon that you would love to share with people?
Yeah, so I'll go a little bit more west of Lake Havasu and the Grand Canyon and head over to Death Valley National Park in California.
Hot. Super hot.
Hot. It does get hot. And I have been there in August just to see how hot it gets. It's an experience I've done once and don't really need to do again. It's incredible to experience.
Is it physically painful?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was carrying my tripod in my hand and it's, you know, metal and black. And so I'm walking out at like 122, 124 onto the playa and I like wrapping my tripod in my, you know, shirt and my skirt, like, cause you can't touch it. It's just, everything's too hot. So, but you have to, I had to see what it was like. I just couldn't, I had to know.
Yeah. That's interesting. So what happens? Yeah. Thankfully we have moved past film. What happens with camera gear when it's that hot? I know that like I've had a warning on my camera before that it has gotten too hot.
Yeah.
Assume that would happen there specifically, or is it not quite so bad because it's not humid?
I mean, it definitely, you have the chance of overheating. I have to be honest, I was only there for less than 24 hours and I was in air conditioning in my vehicle most of the time. So, I would caution you to, just take care of your camera gear or just go at a different time of year when it is not so hot. Because it is absolutely delightful in the winter months.
What would you say is probably the best or maybe the most iconic view or hike, if you want to, in Death Valley? I've only driven around it. I've never actually like gone and like hung out in Needles, just chilling.
Rob, you got to get out more. Come on.
Oh my God. I'm busy.
Come visit. Yeah, it's really hard to nail down a single iconic view in Death Valley because there is actually so much diversity. So you've got the Mesquite Flat Sand Dunes, you've got the Salt Flats, you've got Dante's View, which is kind of the overlook over the entire valley. They have slot canyons too, and so like Mosaic Canyon. And so, yeah, most people don't associate Death Valley. They just think it's like kind of desert rock. And it is absolutely teeming with life and recreation. And so there is so much to do there. The best time of year to go is really February, March, when you have the chance of seeing desert blooms, wildflowers. It doesn't happen every year, but you know, it's like this year they started blooming in December and that was spectacular to see. And
this year, didn't Badwater Basin didn't actually have water in it this winter?
It did. Lake Manly, which was a lake in that area.
It has a name. Okay.
Yeah. Well, Lake Manly is a 10,000-year-old lake. So it had since disappeared, but people are referring to it as Lake Manly just because it looks like it would have looked 10,000 years ago. And so it doesn't happen very often, rarely. And yeah, this year, you know, I was able to, you know, get almost knee deep in it at one point, and it was mind blowing. So that's what happens when you get a bunch of rain in the desert. It has nowhere to go. And so
I was in Vegas right after a rainstorm, and it was crazy because Vegas itself was just little rivers running through the streets and going down all the little tunnels. And it's interesting when it rains in the desert and doesn't have anywhere to go quickly, like flash floods. Those are a thing. For sure.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
It's really wild.
And you mentioned wildflowers in Death Valley, which that's not something I think of with Death Valley. Where would you say has the best like super bloom in the Southwest? I know that, you know, if we want to talk about wildflowers in Arizona, you are somewhat of an expert in that field. Where would you send people who want to see, you know, the desert in bloom?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because growing up, you know, I had this idea that the desert was just a bunch of sand. And then when I moved here, I realized that every spring and summer, and in some places even in fall, like the desert comes alive with color, and it is gorgeous. So anytime you can come out to the Sonoran Desert, the Mojave Desert, to see these blooms is incredible. If you want to pair wildflowers with incredible views, I would definitely head to Oregon Pipe or Saguaro, Oregon Pipe National Monument or Saguaro National Park. Mm-hmm. Both are desert landscapes. They both are going to have beautiful wildflower blooms. Both will start usually around February and bloom all the way through June. That's kind of their spring summer bloom. It starts with perennials and annuals like Mexican gold poppies. It will go to cactus blooms in, you know, later in the spring, early summer. And then if you're lucky, you can also catch a monsoon bloom. And that usually happens July and August. And it's just crazy to see flowers.
Is it kind of like the rain just all of a sudden wakes everything back up for a hot sec?
Yeah, well, it triggers new and different species to wake up. But yes, it essentially revives that dry landscape. And it doesn't, honestly, Rob, it doesn't take very much rain. Like it's just enough, and the desert can come absolutely alive. Huh. But what I love about those two places is that you can see cactus and saguaro cactus, Saguaro National Park. You can obviously see saguaros, yeah, which is the United States' largest cactus. But in Oregon Pipe, you can see, so not surprisingly, the Oregon Pipe cactus, which
is such a cool, weird plant.
So weird, right? And so it's that area is really the only place in the United States where the Oregon Pipe cactus grows wild. And so that's really fascinating to see. It's really special. I mean, there's a lot of history and culture down in both of those areas as well, specifically Native American culture and history. But if you're looking for scenic as well, that's a pretty good blend.
Yeah. And down, if you're going to Oregon Pipe, that's like right at the Mexican border, isn't it? Does it touch
it? Yeah, it borders Sonora. Yep.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And then since you brought up Saguaro National Park, or Saguaro, if you have never actually heard it said out loud and you're reading it, Saguaro.
That's how we know locals from the visitors.
Yeah. Which side, because the park is split into two. So which side do you prefer, whether that be for hiking or photography? I thought the Rincon side was really cool, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
The Rincon side is really spectacular for extended overnight hiking. If you are looking for more of a day visit, the west side is definitely where you want to go. There's plenty to see in both, so if you have time, do both. And they're both going to feature a substantial number of saguaro cactus in addition to other Sonoran Desert flora and fauna. So
they're both just like 15 minutes from like downtown.
Yeah.
So it's not difficult to kind of swap between the two.
Yeah, the Rincon side's a little bit more mountainous, but, you know.
I thought it was really cool. Saw lots of, it's funny, when we were there in December, we saw several roadrunners, which I'm always excited about that because, I mean, roadrunners. But we had a moment where we saw a roadrunner and then we saw a coyote within, like, ooh, it was within moments. Like, clearly, there was some sort of filming for Warner Brothers happening because it was boom, boom, and no anvils falling from the sky, but
okay, I would have ducked, exactly.
But it was hilarious because we're like, oh cool, a roadrunner, oh wow, a coyote, uh-oh, what's happening?
That's crazy.
I know. It was funny because we're like, that's just so iconic, and
that is,
it actually happened that way. Good times. What about New Mexico? So I've been to New Mexico a few times, and I love, you know, Northwest New Mexico, that whole Shiprock area, Four Corners, sure, going down, you know, Route 66, Gallup and Red Rocks. Do you have a favorite spot in New Mexico?
Yeah, actually it would kind of be in that sort of neck of the woods. So I like to spend a fair bit of time around Abiquiu. Some people might know that as Georgia O'Keeffe country. Georgia O'Keeffe was a phenomenal painter. She's one of my inspirations for my own artistic work. And you can visit Ghost Ranch, which is one of the places that she stayed. She had a couple of houses, one at Ghost Ranch, one in Abiquiu, and you can visit her house in Abiquiu on a tour. But it's, you know, Santa Fe, Taos, like that whole area has, you know, some just remarkable landscapes, rock formations, again, geology, the Rio Chama is there. And so it's just it's a little bit higher elevation than like say Phoenix Desert. So you get a little bit more trees, and yeah, it's, it's just a really peaceful place to visit. Like, very inspirational. I can see why someone like George O'Keefe loved it.
And like Taos, when I hear Taos, I also think about like skiing and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, I am thinking the correct thing, because that
absolutely
that doesn't strike me as like a Southwest activity. But
so we have a lot of ski areas in, if that's your thing, in the Southwest. So like in Flagstaff, we have Snow Bowl, we have Sunrise out in the eastern Arizona mountains. We have, you have Taos, even Mount Lemmon outside of Tucson, I think opens for 1 or 2 days a winter. So.
That's funny, because I definitely don't think of skiing in Tucson in the same sentence or paragraph or chapter.
Right. Well, it's the southernmost ski area in the northern hemisphere of the world.
Oh.
How about that?
There you go. That explains it then. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. One more state that we kind of need to dip our toes into, because we're talking Southwest. One of my favorite states ever in the entire country is Utah. And especially that southern half of Utah, where you've got, you know, you've got Zion and Bryce and Cedar Breaks over on the west side, and then you've got Arches and Canyonlands and so much more over on the east side. What is your go-to spot if you're like, I need a quick Utah break? Where are you going?
All of those are spectacular.
You're like, I'm doing all of it. I will be gone.
Yes. Yes. The answer is yes. I kind of like the Bluff area. So again, not surprising. It's part of my river connection. So there is a place called Gooseneck State Park, which is it's an overlook along the San Juan River. And it is, the San Juan River meanders. It's actually called an entrenched meander, which I think is one of the coolest geological forms in the world. I think that's so cool. It's an entrenched meander through 300 million year old rock, and there's rapids at the bottom. But basically, this overlook, it's literally goosenecks. You see the river advance 6 miles, but it's only like, it's only like 1.5 miles wide. Like it's contained. And so it's just zigzagging back and forth right in front of your eyes. And so you have a distant view of Monument Valley, and yeah, it's just a really beautiful place to photograph or visit. It's also an international dark sky that has an international dark sky designation. And so if you're looking for stars to kind of reach out and touch, that's a great place to do.
Yeah. When we were in Bluff, I left my family back at our cute little cabin that we were staying in. And I just went and set up in like at the base of a cliff, taking pictures for an hour. And I loved it. Another spot right there that I was just thinking of, and I didn't put it in my notes to talk about, but Hovenweep National Monument. Have you been there?
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, that God. Has so much rich history.
That is one of the coolest places. Oh, see, so we are going to need to record another episode about this, where we talk about all the different sites and settlements and ruins and cliff dwellings, because there's so much that we haven't even like started to scratch this.
I know. That's why I asked how long of a podcast you had for this, because man, we've got lots to cover.
Okay, yeah, we're going to have another episode that is specifically about all of that, because there is so much. Oh my gosh, and especially thinking about everything in Arizona. Okay.
Yeah, I know.
We'll do another one.
Okay.
We'll get into it. We need a whole nother episode to talk about everything else that was on my list to get through too, because we didn't even talk about Canyonlands National Park, Arches National Park, Goblin Valley State Park. There are hot springs to hike to that are just beautiful and gorgeous. There's so much to cover. So, okay, we have two more episodes about the Southwest that we need to record sometime very soon.
Works for me.
Excellent. Any other kind of like closing thoughts about travel in the Southwest that you want to share, specific to anything that we've already talked about, or just like simple travel tip besides always have water with you?
Definitely stay hydrated. So you definitely want to carry more water than you think you need. The other is that a little bit of planning will go a long way. A lot of the places that we have talked about are kind of off the beaten path, and there aren't services always open. There's not a lot of services in general in some of these places we've talked about. So you definitely want to make sure that you've got lodging figured out, you kind of have an idea of food and restaurants and things like that, so, and gas, just to make sure you don't find yourself on the road and stuck.
There's a lot of places we were talking about, very poor cell service.
Yes.
So,
Yes.
yeah, having that sort of that like roadside emergency knowledge, I think, would be a part of being prepared.
Yeah, I would definitely encourage AAA. I would also encourage carrying a Garmin inReach. Those are the two things that I do when I travel around the Southwest to stay safe, and they have helped me tremendously.
Yeah, I only recently learned about the inReach when I was reading this great book. It was called So Said the River, and it was this like invaluable tool. It was
Yeah.
great to hear about that. But in all seriousness, that is actually something that we need to invest in based off of some of the places that we go. So, well, cool.
Absolutely. Stay safe out there.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's nothing is fun if it's not safe.
That's a great motto.
Yeah. Thank you for joining me again, and
Thank you. Thank you, Rob.
I will get thoughts organized so that we can tackle some more really cool spots. And also, I want us to dig into all the different ruins and cultures that you can experience in the Southwest, because I think that is one of the coolest things about getting to visit, Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, that whole zone. I love it. Cool. Well, everyone, thank you so much for listening. And if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button right there in your little app. And don't forget to give us a rating if you liked it. And if you didn't like it, just move on. That's fine. Colleen, thank you again for joining us. And you guys will hear her again sometime soon.
Sounds great. We'll see you next time.
Two Travel Dads podcast is created by Rob and Chris Taylor in St. Augustine, Florida. We'd love to answer your questions here on the podcast, providing both our experience and stories to share our own insights into whatever you're wondering about. Visit twotraveldads.com/podcast-episodes to leave your questions and to check out past episodes and show notes. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and have an awesome day.